The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back, Houston. These guys missed you over the last break. It's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, I got a good old-fashioned would-you-rather between two. Do you?
Yeah, because a lot of them would-you-rathers is James Harden, which I hate, and another proposition that I hate more.
The last who would-you-rather was Justin Verlander, Hunter Brown, and then the other one was Carlos Correa, Jeremy Pena.
Those were better.
This would-you-rather, usually two is kind of relevant with who the Astros are playing. This is another Astro one. Would you rather Kyle Tucker or Hunter Pence? I'm sorry, George Springer.
Wow, that's an easy one.
What are we doing?
It's an easy one.
Sometimes I confuse Pence and Springer. Would you rather Kyle Tucker or George Springer?
Ah, man. That's tough because I've always said.
You think it's hard?
It is.
I think it's so easy.
I do too.
Kyle Tucker, not even close. You could pay Kyle Tucker today just like Springer. You could pay him more. My answer is Kyle Tucker.
Are we talking about with their contracts and their age and everything?
I think it's just
you
like
can spin it however you want to spin it.
Springer's not on the field. He's hurt all the time.
Like George Springer when he was an Astro was my favorite Astro.
Oh, I mean, it's like people like jump on me for jumping on the Astros bandwagon. He's the reason why.
And he's a great dude too.
I love George Springer. Like watching him play baseball is awesome.
Someone brought it up the other day.
He's not healthy ever.
The fact that he's a great dude, too, he loves talking to kids about his stuttering problem. He doesn't hide it. You know, he did so many different things, and he didn't want the credit for it. He just did those things. It showed you who he was. But I think that if you take a younger Kyle Tucker who hasn't got close to getting big money yet, it's a pretty easy decision for the Astros that you take Kyle Tucker over George Springer, though it's painful for me because I'm a George Springer guy.
So what was your answer?
I said Kyle Tucker. He got it.
Yeah, you said Tucker. For the Astros, but you said for you, you're a George Springer guy.
I'll take the smart answer is Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, to me it's Kyle Tucker. Tucker's a better player right now than George Springer is.
Yeah, today, yeah.
Tucker's better right now, today. He's younger than George Springer is by 7 years. Kyle Tucker's not making nearly as much money as George Springer. Springer's making close to $25 million a year. Kyle Tucker's making five. So you're getting a better player, a younger player, a player that is on the field more often for $20 million less. A lot of times we lose sight of kind of the smart answer, as you said, Blankers, for like the nostalgia of a player. To me, it's easily Kyle Tucker. Michael Shapiro, who does some content stuff for Cron.com, he asked, should the Astros have regrets about George Springer's departure? Springer left, of course, a couple of years ago, signed that $150 million six-year deal with the Toronto Blue Jays. Everybody loved Springer. Springer was a fan favorite. The biggest problem that I have whenever we have the George Springer conversation, one, I think that the Astros made the right decision. Two, everybody's like, well, you could just put him into center field. You know who gave up with the idea of George Springer as a center fielder? The Blue Jays.
Blue Jays and George Springer.
Blue Jays don't want George Springer as a center fielder because they feel like he's lost some range. They feel like if he plays center field every day, especially on the Toronto turf, that he's going to get hurt because he has a history of being injury prone over the course of his career. It's why they went out and got Kevin Kiermaier. We can no longer say that George Springer is a center fielder.
Yeah, and I think that that was one of those deals where when we were talking about this, we saw it differently than I think a lot of people saw it, in the fact that, much like I go back to the Stevie Francis era when he was getting ready for his mega deals, and I was like, man, I think it's dangerous because there's a dude that relies entirely on quickness and hops. And as he gets older, when you're signing a long-term deal, those are the things that are going to go first, and then he's going to have to recreate his game. Springer, same way. Like, whether he was playing on Toronto's turf or not, the fact of the matter is, as you get older, there's a reason why, like, shortstops go to third base. Because at a certain point, you lose your range. You lose the quickness. You lose the instincts to jump as soon as the bat jumps off the ball a little bit. And it's easier to hide and deal with as a corner outfielder than as a center fielder. It was bound to happen to George Springer. We knew he was older when trying to look for a long-term deal than most guys. We knew he also had a chip on his shoulder about how he was handled when he was brought up and all those other things, too. I love George Springer as an Astro, but I agree with you. They made the right call in not signing him to that deal for that amount of money.
If the Astros offered George Springer $150 million 6 years, the same deal that he got with Toronto, where do you think he's playing baseball?
If he had to choose between the two, he's still playing in Houston.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that we kind of overrate a little bit the whole how he was brought up with the Astros. And I'm sure he was scorned and didn't feel great about it because he felt like he was a big leaguer way before that. But I don't think that's why he left Houston.
No,
the Astros were never even like interested in bringing Springer back.
They tried to do some things before he hit full out free agency to try and ease the pain too. But at the same time, he was just, that was a cash grab, and he was going to take whoever gave him what he wanted to get because, you know, this was probably going to be his last big deal. And so he went to Toronto. You're right. If the Astros make the same offer, look, but I also think it's easy to say, "Hey, if they don't win a World Series, I think that you know, there's a chance that Springer's looking to take less money to try and still win." But the fact that he had a ring in his back pocket, that he had been on this great one with the Astros, it was easier to leave.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it depends on a player's priority. Like, do you want the money? Do you want the bag? Do you want a championship chase? Most of the time, they want the bag. 713-780-ESPN. We have some Springer defenders in the chat. 6030 says Springer all day. Jason and Champions, then move Tucker to center, Springer and right. I don't care if our defense suffers a little, our offense is much better. I don't think Kyle Tucker's a center fielder. You played center field in the World Series, but the Astros refused to move him to center field. So you're talking about two right fielders. Tucker and Springer are a pair of right fielders. Springer's not played a game in center field for Toronto. They don't want to use him in center field ever again. That's why they brought in Kevin Kiermaier. Tucker, right now, I rather have Tucker over George Springer. I think he's better right now, cheaper right now, younger right now. Mega Blast says Tucker's better than Springer ever was. That's where I'll draw a line. I think Springer at his absolute best has been better than Tucker at his absolute best. And then also you can throw in the whole Springer at his absolute best can also play center field whenever he was younger.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I don't think that the only thing quick twitchy about Kyle Tucker is just his hand-eye coordination at the plate. But in the outfield, and his ability to jump and attack baseballs. I understand he's won gold gloves, but at the same time, I don't think that, I think the way that those are decided to me, I look at it and go, if I want a guy to go get a baseball, whether to climb a wall, go in and get, and be like the ultimate gamer and competitor, I'm looking at George Springer. I love the way he attacked every single play on the diamond, and he played his tail off every pitch. I think Kyle Tucker plays at a slower speed a lot of times, but that's not a knock on Kyle Tucker. I just love the way Springer played the game. It's just at his age versus Tucker's age and all those other things that factor in too, I can't let my heart get in the way of my decision.
Yeah, Springer's the better athlete. Springer's a better athlete than Kyle Tucker. Mm-hmm. I think Kyle
People
Tucker
don't realize how big George was in person.
No, he's an incredible athlete.
Yep.
I think Tucker has like more baseball know-how. Like, if that makes sense, because, like, Kyle Tucker wins gold gloves without Springer's athleticism. Kyle Tucker steals way more bags than George Springer ever did.
Springer wasn't a great base runner.
Even though Kyle Tucker isn't nearly as fast as George Springer. Like, and Kyle Tucker doesn't strike out nearly as much as George Springer, despite George Springer having the athleticism. I'm not trying to knock Springer. Springer is, like, by far the better athlete. I think in terms of, like, baseball know-how, like, baseball skill, I think Kyle Tucker has more baseball skill than George Springer did, but then George Springer had way more athleticism than Kyle Tucker does. Now, Tucker's not bad athletically, though.
No, but I also think, like, Springer's not bad defensively. I think...
No, he's not.
I think Springer, at his best, was one of the better defensive outfielders in baseball. So, did he win gold gloves like Kyle Tucker? No, But we remember, of all the memories we have of George Springer, we remember him climbing walls like he did in Arlington and bringing back home runs and doing some of those things, too, with, you know, getting in the gap to take away extra base hits. So I was, like I said, I was a big fan of the way he played the game and attacked both offensively and defensively.
See, part of that was his like downfall, though. Like playing with that his much tenacity sure. and aggression, yeah. I think is part of the reason why he's missed a ton mm-hmm. of games in his big league career.
I don't disagree with that. I think that, yeah, because he attacked at all times, a lot of times maybe guys make business decisions. I don't think George ever made those business decisions.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He still got paid, though. Mega says, I will say this, though, because he thinks Tucker better than Springer at their peak. I won't go that far. He says, I will say this. Neither Tucker or Springer are worth long-term giant contracts like they want. I think Springer is playing out that way, that he's not worth what he got on the open market. His first year away from Houston, he only played in 78 games. Last year, he played 133 games, was fine, 814 OPS. It's fine. It's probably not worth how much he's getting paid. And then this year, he's been pretty bad. 713 OPS for George Springer this season.
Tuck's going to get a big contract. I think you and I are on the same page. I don't think it's going to be here. I think that he's going to command more than the Astros are willing to pay, and we're going to face another situation where we come to that fork in the road, and he's going to go one way, and the Astros are going to go the other.
Yeah. I wouldn't pay Tucker either, at least based on what we're thinking he's going to get. Like I just don't believe in huge contracts, and I think Tucker wants a huge contract.
He does.
If you can get him on a Yordan type of deal, I mean, I would sign that as quickly as I could.
He already passed on that.
Yeah, he did. Austin T, Tucker is better now, but Springer is your favorite player's favorite player.
Your favorite player.
Jose Altuve is my new favorite player. So I don't know if Jose Altuve's favorite player is George Springer.
New as in this year, or it's been that way for
remember
a while?
No, last year, remember we – Carlos Correa used to be my favorite player, but I didn't want to pay the man.
Yeah.
So last year, remember we did that segment. We were trying to pick our new favorite players. Where did you land? You landed on Bregman, right?
Did I?
I think you did.
I don't remember.
I did. Who do you have a favorite player?
Yeah, I mean, my whole family loves Altuve. Even Lisa is an Altuve fan. My daughter wears 27 in softball for Altuve.
Do you think Altuve's favorite player is George Springer?
No.
I don't think so either. Joe, who's your favorite player? Luis Robert?
On the Astros?
Well, just favorite player.
Sure, Astros.
My favorite player right now is probably Christian Javier.
I love Javier too. Do you?
My favorite player right now is Yordan.
Do you have a Cub that you like more than Javier?
I have a weird love for I can't get enough of Nico Horner.
Really?
Their second baseman. He's awesome. I love everything about him. The way he plays baseball.
He's a good player.
And I really like Dansby.
That's Bob Horner's kid.
You like Dansby Swanson?
It's hard to root for Dansby Swanson. He's awesome.
Is he?
He was picked behind Alex Bregman. Yeah, is Dansby or in front of Bregman?
In front
of Bregman.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Is Dansby better than Bregman right now? Because remember when they first came up, it was Bregman by a mile over Dansby.
That's
right
hard.
Now, today, is Dansby better than Bregman?
Right now, I'd probably say yes.
I think the position probably gives him the victory over Alex Bregman. I think Bregman's still probably a better offensive player.
I can't believe Dansby Swanson went number one overall and then never played for that team. He was traded for Shelby Miller.
He was a Diamondback, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They traded him for Shelby Miller.
That's wild.
That's Bob Horner's kid?
I don't know. I'm not sure, actually, if he is.
The place for the Cubs?
I don't think so, but I have no idea. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Michael Schwab, very big on the Astros beat on Twitter. Big Astro guy. Especially, I think he's the head of Astros Twitter, as a matter of fact. He has two Astros top two trade deadline targets, apparently from the club. Who are they? Does it make sense? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, doing just enough not to get fired.
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Well, we're the freaks of the industry.
Razor Blunt Commentary, delivered with a special purpose.
What's happening to my special purpose?
It's the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
This is what you picked.
Oh, I did.
This is what you picked.
Yep. There's an instrumental version. There's also a remix version that's sped up a little bit. It's a good cut.
You're taking this over Salinas?
And I'm not, it wasn't an either or Jeremy question. It was, we can make requests, and I made one. I mean, you've always been known as a freak of the industry. I enjoy the song.
It's not true. Okay. Right.
Digital Underground, Donna.
You can make your request. You got to tweet at Joe George Radio. Did you at least tweet at Joe George Radio?
Indeed, I did.
He did. Okay. That's why he got it. That's we'll get good. To the other ones tomorrow.
That makes me feel better.
We're out of request time for today.
Well, I mean, I can sleep now.
With being out of request time?
No more.
Feel better. What makes me feel better that you played by Joe's rules?
Well, I mean, look, we were trained well by the puppeteer.
True. We were.
Yep.
Austin,
and
the way
we're not big time radio with big time guys, so we just kind of bridge the gap.
Measly midday guys.
Drive time to drive time.
Lamont just texted us and said there's a volcano erupting right now live in Hawaii. I hope everybody's safe.
I hope the volume's down. You're listening to us, which obviously you are while watching.
That. I do hope everybody's safe. Yes. Those things can be very dangerous.
I've got my best man at my wedding and one of my best friends in the world, his family, and his family still lives in Hawaii. So
did you ever do Diamond Head?
No.
Diamond Head's pretty cool. That's on a volcano.
Yeah, the volcanoes in Hawaii, when they do the, we didn't do the tours. I just kind of did it from with his family. So it was like skip the commercialized Hawaii, but see it. The volcanoes are impressive. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they can be damaging. Yeah. Austin T, we were talking about Austin because he's like the one Springer guy. Talked about the way he plays the game, the person off the field, the type of clubhouse guy he is. Springer all around is just the type of player everyone would want in their clubhouse at the right price. Take Kyle Tucker right now. So Michael Schwab, he runs Astros Twitter. He listed the Astros' top two trade deadline candidates. He says two names that are at the top of the Astros' trade deadline wish list are pitchers Shane Bieber and outfielder DH Jorge Soler, for people familiar with the process. So we did this with Aaron Wilson the other day. Mm-hmm. How much do we take their reporting seriously? Because Aaron Wilson had the whole D'Amico Ryans gaffe.
Right. I was going to say, the same way we did that for Aaron Wilson, what are the big gaffes of the Schwab?
I don't think I don't know. I take him seriously. Honestly, Joe, I do. I take Schwab seriously. Did he have some gaffes that I'm not remembering?
No, I'm asking. Joe normally has kind of finger on the pulse of the gaffes.
Gaffes. I think he throws a lot of stuff that doesn't happen.
See, I think a lot of...
It doesn't mean that it's not true.
But I don't think he does that whenever he throws in per people familiar with the process. I think once he throws that in, he's credible.
I think he's solid. Yeah,
you can have a rumor that is being discussed or that doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah, or
but
I would like player A. That doesn't mean he has anybody reporting on it.
Right.
Or he's reporting on it. He says per people familiar with the process, the two names at the top of the Astros wish list are Shane Bieber and Jorge Soler.
Now, I
take that seriously.
I think he's solid.
Yeah, I think it's solid. I think I take that as the truth.
I'm saying that in the past, he could have said the Astros have had discussions with said team about said player. It might not come to fruition in a full-blown trade,
right?
But that's nothing to say that it didn't the discussions didn't happen.
Right.
And that's where he keeps his credibility. So I don't have any reason to doubt him. I think one of the guys is a guy that you really like. I like the other guy a lot. I think he's going to be expensive to go get in Bieber, but I think Bieber is a really nails pitcher that you'd love to have, but I think a lot of teams are going to love to have him. I think there's going to be a lot of competition. There's going to be a lot of money thrown around and a lot of prospects. I don't think the Astros are going to be in that game. The other guy you like, I think, would be a good fit. I just don't know if they have the cojones to make that move in the first year of a three-year with Abreu.
Well, he's not going to play first.
He's a good DH?
Yeah, he's never played first in his life. So he's not taking Abreu's spot.
Is he going to play outfield?
Yeah, he's outfield DH.
Would you put him in the outfield?
Yeah, he's probably a better outfielder than Yordan.
You think so?
Probably.
I think Jordan's got a better arm, right?
Yeah, but how much is like the arm to his defense?
I'm just saying, if we're
defense,
just comparing all but, aspects of an outfielder.
But like what if you're looking at all the traits of an outfielder, where does the arm come in for a left fielder? Like it's nice to have, but it's probably fifth on my list. Like give me speed, give me range, give me a guy who can catch the ball, and then arm.
Okay. I mean, speed in center field, yes. But I think that, Michael Brantley's never had speed.
No.
But he's been a decent outfielder. I think arm for me is up a notch.
I think too. For my thing with Soler is that like when he was with the Cubs, I felt like he was generally unaware of some of the dimensions in the outfield.
Uh-huh.
And like I just feel like he didn't play the cleanest outfield. And my one concern here in Houston would be, and it's funny because they both were former Cubs, but like going back to the World Series last year with Schwarber, like he clearly had no idea what to do with that wall. Now Soler, if he played here, it might be a little bit different because you would play here you know, multiple times a week for long stretches. You probably figure it out. I kind of question how he would adapt to the wall.
Like, I think the wall is easy, honestly.
I think we overcomplicate the wall.
But I think the way that you position yourself kind of eliminates the wall. Like, you see the Astros do this a lot, actually. Look to see where the Astros position their left fielder. They position him outside of the perimeter of the wall. They position him to the cutoff. That way it's easy for him to go back to the cutoff. And anything that's hit over your head in left field anyways off the wall is a double. So the Astros position their left fielder all the time to the cutout. So you really don't even have to navigate the wall unless a ball goes to the wall.
The quirky thing about that wall is because of the manual scoreboard, there's all those little creases and edges and things that can take a ball crazy no matter where it hits.
Yeah.
So that's a difficult proposition. When you say the cut, you're saying like the cutoff or the cutout?
The cut. The cut where the wall
where it
turns
goes deeper
into the gap.
into the visiting bullpen.
Watch where the Astros position their left fielder. They always position them right around where that cut is at. Now, not that deep, but they play them like where the cut's at. That way, if a ball goes over their head, they can just go straight back and not around the corner. And then anything that's over their head, if they're playing left field anyways, is just off the wall. Now, like filling it off the wall, that's impossible to practice
for. It's not like Fenway where you can understand the caroms coming off a smooth surface. It's like that whole manual scoreboard is the wall, and so with every little crevice for everywhere, every number fits in the city and the name, that can take a baseball crazy no matter where it hits.
Yeah. So that one's like, that's just unlucky.
Joe, who do you think's a better outfielder, Yordan or Soler?
Probably. I think Alvarez is like really underrated.
I do too.
In the outfield, he makes some quality plays out there. In terms of arm strength, like that part of it alone, it's probably really tight. Like, Soler's got a gun, and so does Alvarez. Those guys can whip it.
But doesn't this all go back to our Yordan rules? Like,
I would rather have Soler out there than Yordan, just because if one got hurt, you prefer to not be Yordan.
The interesting part of this is, like, acquiring Soler, and I'm very intrigued by Soler. Like, he's probably not going to hit for much average. Like, he's going to hit 230, but he's going to have potential to hit 40, 45 home runs over the full season. He gives you power into the lineup. The interesting part about that is you have decisions on what you want to do. Because, like, wherever Yordan wants to play, he's going to play. Left field DH. But then what does it do for Michael Brantley? What does it do for Corey Jolks? Is he part of the trade? What does it do for Chaz McCormick? Is he part of the trade? So, like, acquiring Soler comes with some really difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. Might come with Michael Brantley not really maybe ever playing, but if he does come back, he's like a backup, because you're not acquiring Soler and then all of a sudden you're just not going to play him, and he can't play first base. So like acquiring Soler comes with some very difficult conversations. The Bieber thing, I think Bieber is going to be expensive, but you know, looking at and doing a deep dive on this, knowing that we're going to talk about it, Bieber's velocity is down, and some people are down on Bieber. Like, people don't think Bieber is the same Shane Bieber that he was. Now, I still think the Guardians are going to ask for what Shane Bieber used to be, which might make it more difficult to trade him. I think that they're still going to treat Shane Bieber as like the Cy Young candidate, a Cy Young guy. Many people around the league don't view him as that, but the Guardians are going to ask for that. If a team's trading for Bieber and they also don't think that he's the same Shane Bieber, they're not going to give the Guardians demands.
It'll be interesting, because I think that some teams are going to be more desperate than others as they try and get ready for the playoffs. Will the Rangers try to make another big splash and cover up for a DeGrom? But other teams are going to sit there and not that they're necessarily going to press the panic button, but they're going to be more interested, regardless if his velocity's down a little or not, in doing whatever they need to do to try and get a guy that takes them over the top. I saw him, for as much as I don't sit there and tell you that I watch every game that he pitches, but I saw him in a pitcher's duel with Verlander earlier this season. That was a 2-1 game. Verlander gave up an early bomb. Everybody thought that he was just looking like he wasn't himself. He buckled down. He didn't give up another run. Bieber dueled him the entire game. And I'm like, that's the guy you want on the hill in the playoffs, regardless of velocity. He's a pitcher. He's smart. But
I still like Bieber for what it's worth. Now, like, his strikeout rate's down, his walk rate is up, his velocity is down. But like you said, like, his production's still been pretty good. And he's also under club control for another year. Like, if you're telling me the Astros acquired Shane Bieber, I would need to know what for.
Yep.
But he would be one of the four best pitchers on this team, even if he's not the same Shane Bieber. I'd be happy with both of these guys. I would need to know the trade. And both of them do come with a little bit of concern. For Soler, well, who you giving up? What does left field look like? What happens with Jolks? What happens with Chaz McCormick? What's happening with Michael Brantley? And then if you're trading for Shane Bieber, it's, well, again, what does the package look like? It probably is going to be a pretty significant trade package if you're trading for Bieber. And then can he try to revert back to the old Shane Bieber? I'd be excited to see what Murphy and Miller could do with him.
That is the other element I was going to go to, is as much as we used to say it was just Brent Strom, but now we realize when you come to the Astros, you can learn some things, adjust some things, and actually take your game to another level. And the other thing is, if Shane Bieber is your number three in the playoffs or your number four, you're in a pretty damn good spot.
Yeah, you are. And he's got a year of club control, too. So you, like, you know, you could maybe figure him out again in the offseason if he's not great this year. But he has a good ERA. The strikeout rate down, walk rate up, velocity down. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. We never know what we're getting at 2:30. It's our will of bits. It could be anything, any specific day. Sometimes it's the same thing again. Sometimes it's something we never heard of. All we know is that it's called What If. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN975.com. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
It's the Wheel of Bits on the Killer Bees.
Kibbles and bits, kibbles and bits. I'm going to get me some kibbles and bits.
Who knows the bits the bees will begrudgingly bite? Well, let's find out.
What's it?
Here's Joel and Jeremy. And Joe.
All right, what do we got today? All we know is that it's What If. Joe just throws random things at us, tries to trick us, tries to make us look dumber than interns.
No. Well, that, yes.
You did do that.
Yeah, that's true.
And we held our own. You asked them very specific questions about their lives, and somehow we managed to tie in the upsets of the century.
I was thinking about doing, like really, are you smarter than an intern? And doing some, like, geography for the next one.
I'm a one-trick pony.
That's what I know. You guys would lose that. Like, but I'm not sure.
Do you?
I mean, it depends on how you, like, if you, honestly, if you tried to stack the questions, like you stacked the questions last
if
time.
If I asked them fairly, both parties might go 0 for 9.
It'd be interesting. That'd be interesting.
Or 0 for 7.
That would Jeopardy be worth doing me? That. Okay. But you can't ask the TCU guy, what city is TCU located?
You got both TCU questions right. You keep bringing
how
it
many,
up.
Well, it was a stacked question. We just somehow pulled off the upset.
Well, because you're a college
Because that's
expert.
How the game
what,
works.
What exit off of 35 do you have to take to
it's how the
visit
game works.
The TCU campus?
What, to try and make us look stupid?
No. Are you smarter than a fifth
no
grader?
No one watches that show.
A lot of people watch that show. It's, you started with the kindergarten questions, then you went up.
So who hosts the show?
It was
there you go.
Comedian.
That's how many people watch the show.
You're just mad. You take it out on us because you're just mad.
No, because you guys just relentlessly
You have to work hard to make
everything.
Us look said, stupid. We don't. We just have to describe what you're doing in there.
He said everybody watches the show, couldn't name the host.
It's been a while. Drew a blank.
He couldn't name the host.
Okay. That show's not on anymore.
You draw a blank and I'll kick a George.
Stop. That's a dumb joke.
That's not how it works, huh? Okay.
All right, what if? So I got three questions. I don't know if we'll get to all of them so we can save them for the next time. This was inspired by something that Jeremy said like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
This could be anything.
There's this TV show called What If. It's like a Marvel thing where it's like they change a point in history and like what's the fallout from that. So that's kind of this theory, right? So the question is, this first one is, how do you think the Texans' history is different if Michael Vick stays that extra year and eventually becomes the first pick of the draft for the Texans in 2001?
Ooh.
Like if Michael,
you got to take into consideration everything.
You can factor in, like, do you think that if Michael Vick is away from Atlanta, he doesn't get into trouble with the dogfighting? Because, like, that's where his friends were from. Like, that's where all of it happened, was
but
in Atlanta.
I've seen it happen too many times that, yeah, it's more convenient and easy and accessible
sure.
when you stay home. But I can give you multiple examples.
100%.
Some recent as what's going on right now in the NBA.
Yeah, which I'll
let
Moran.
You know. Yes. The friends will travel.
Yeah.
So, like, if Michael Vick is the first pick in the history of the Texans organization, how differently, like, do you think the trajectory of the franchise is instead of starting off with David Carr?
Ooh, it's big.
I think Beamer has a national title.
That's the first part. Yes, 100%.
Probably not. I was being
no.
I
think Michael Vick has a Heisman and a national championship. I'm totally on board.
National
with that.
Title might be tough because like his team was not great. I think he has a Heisman.
Yep.
He would have a Heisman. A national championship. I don't know. Like, that was a one. I mean, they had other decent players, and he almost single-handedly beat Florida State in the national championship game. But that team was not a great team. They had a great player.
Right.
So probably Heisman, maybe contend for a national championship. What it does for Michael Vick's career, I don't think it changes Michael Vick's career a whole lot. I think that what we saw from Michael Vick in Atlanta is what you're going to see in Houston. I'm with you, too.
But it changes the franchise.
Right. I'm getting there.
Oh.
I don't think that it changes, like, the production of Michael Vick.
Right.
Like, Michael, maybe he starts off a little slower because he's on an expansion team, but he only played two games. Like, he started two games his rookie year anyways. I still think that he gets in trouble.
I do too.
I'm with you. I think that his fans travel. He was the number one pick, makes plenty of money. I think he was looking for like their support. I still think that he gets in trouble. I still think the dogfighting thing happens, and that the Texans probably cut ties from Michael Vick, just like Atlanta cut ties from Michael Vick.
But is the upswing bigger with Michael Vick than what you had as the alternative with the team with trading for Schaub and doing what they did?
You would have gotten 6 years of Michael Vick. It's interesting you got Schaub because they had Michael Vick. But you would have had 6 years of Michael Vick. First 6 years of Michael Vick would have gone better for the Houston Texans, no doubt about it. They might have been able to sneak into the playoffs once or twice with Michael Vick. Because you know what else that means? If Michael Vick, well, you wouldn't have got Julius Peppers because you're drafting Michael Vick.
Right.
So you wouldn't have had Peppers. But I think that the Texans get to the playoffs at least once in Michael Vick's first 6 years, only 6 years that you have him. I think that the buzz of the organization was still pretty high because everybody loved football, but it would have been a better brand. It would have been more exciting because you don't have to live with David Carr. He could also avoid sacks because he's really, really fast. It would have been way better. It would have been more fun. And I think you sneak one, maybe two playoff appearances in.
More national exposure too, because there's going to be more play on a daily basis with a guy that's dynamic.
He's a superstar.
Yeah. That
superstar.
All eyes were going to be on him. More dollars for the organization with Nike and all the sponsors that he had that he carried, that people were going to have eyeballs on him, and then subsequently your franchise. I definitely think they make the playoffs at least once or twice, and I think it completely changes the franchise. But with Bob McNair at the helm, there's no doubt that the minute that the dogfighting becomes an issue, they're done for good.
I don't think they would have tried. I don't think they would have tried to hang on for Vic.
Nope.
I think they would have cut ties. Good. The Texans didn't make the playoffs until 2011. That was the, 10th year of the organization? I don't want to count on the air. They didn't make the playoffs for like almost a decade.
Yeah, they definitely would have made the playoffs.
Yeah, they would have made the playoffs before 11.
Do you think their record is that much different with Michael Vick, his rookie year?
His rookie year, no.
So Michael Vick's drafted with the first pick in this theory, right?
Yeah.
In 2002. The Texans have the same record. So you have to factor in, like, that means they still get Andre.
Oh, Vick and Andre.
And you have, instead of Vick and what he did with, like, Roddy White and those guys where he had great success, like, you're talking about Michael Vick and Andre Johnson, a couple like.
See, I don't think it affects Andre's numbers, though, because Vick wasn't a great passer of the football.
His touchdown numbers might go up.
Don't you also take into consideration, they got Arian during those first 6 years, too, didn't they?
I don't think so. I think Arian came after. Arian's rookie, the first time.
Because that would have been key because they didn't have to draft him.
The first time that Arian Foster led the Texans in rushing was 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was pretty far later. But I don't know if it really impacted Andre Johnson's numbers a ton, maybe slightly, because Vic was never a great thrower of the football. In fact, the best times that like Vic had throwing the football was with Philly,
yeah.
Was with the Eagles, was with Andy Reid.
But
so I don't know if it would have affected Andre's numbers a lot, but from an offensive standpoint, you have Vic, you have Andre Johnson, those two weapons, they would have been a much better offense.
Yeah, see, I think that it still would affect both because I think that you had something that you didn't have with Schaub in the fact that you had a guy that could a guy that extended plays. And because of the fact that he went off script and extended plays,
true.
And you got an all-world receiver to bail you out and be open as part of that, I think the numbers increased both sides because of the fact that he had a stud and Andre had a better quarterback to extend a play.
Yeah. What do you think about this, Joe? Like, do you think the Texans get to the playoffs with Vic? Are you on our side?
I do. I mean, because they got. I mean, look, they had a pretty good playoff run in Atlanta. Well, they lost to Green Bay. I think
they beat Green Bay in Lambeau.
That's right.
They beat us in Lambeau, and it was extremely painful.
Wasn't he the first?
He was single handedly the guy that did it.
And wasn't it the first time a visiting team beat Lambeau like when it was frozen, like
that's
under
right.
32 degrees?
That's right. Because he ran his ass off, and they couldn't stop him. And he was just a one-man wrecking crew, especially on snow.
I think there's a really good – I mean, look, Michael Vick, like he went to an NFC title game. Yeah, after they beat Green Bay with the Atlanta Falcons before he went to jail. I think you could really argue that maybe they don't take over the South, obviously, because Peyton Manning's still there. But the Texans have a real legitimate playoff run in them with Michael Vick and Andre Johnson early on.
I think it would have led to a lot of disappointment, though, whenever the dogfighting stuff happened. Because you would have probably been looking at one of the most electric offenses in the league. Because you have Vick and Andre
Johnson. It's
10
times worse than Deshaun Watson.
I was just going to say, it's what you pick your poison of when you're going to deal with it, but exactly what you're going through with Deshaun, you're just going through it earlier.
If you know that you get to a playoff or two, you have a promising team, you think you're going to have a chance to be like a Super Bowl contender, but then Vic has the dog stuff and he's traded away from the team, like, would you take that? Like, if you could relive history like that, would you do that? Like, you get maybe one playoff appearance, not a deep run, you have a promising future, and then poof, it's gone.
I would take that because all you have to do then is make like one right move. And that's what Atlanta did. They took Matt Ryan. Like, they got Matt Ryan, and then they eventually, yes, they went to the Super Bowl and they lost, and also excruciating.
You embraced the suck earlier, like, because you embraced getting rid of him and losing.
But they were
sucking
anyways. Like, they were sucking anyways. Like, they were losing tons of games anyways. Michael Vick at that time was my favorite football player. Loved watching Michael Vick.
Oh, yeah. My parents, I had jerseys. I had, like, posters. My parents made me get rid of all of it.
Oh, really?
I mean, because that's like when he's, like they said in the Twitch chat, cheat code Madden, he's on the cover.
I loved Michael
Vick. Michael Vick is, like, one of the most electric players in the history of football. It was hard not to fall in love with him and watch him. And then, you're a kid who loves dogs, you got crushed.
Yeah. Well, and the thing was to Jeremy, when Jeremy was saying that, you know, he wasn't a good thrower of the football, though, but when you talk to guys in the NFL, a lot of it they blamed on the system, too, in Atlanta, in the fact that they weren't working with him enough and getting him to where he needed to go. Because Keenan told me multiple times, Keenan McCardle told me, dude throws an unbelievable football. Like, he is an unbelievable passer of the football if he's in the right situation.
And the one thing,
even then, though, he was like 56% of his career completion percentage. Like, he was never an accurate
thrower.
But
don't you think that a lot of it was decisions because of the fact that he was scrambling around off script and then made bad throws, as opposed to if he's in the pocket, could he make the right throws?
But if he's running for yards, shouldn't you be eliminating those bad throws and just running for yards?
Well, Michael Vick admitted in his 30 for 30 that he didn't learn the playbook the way he needed to that he did in Philadelphia, and that's part of the reason why he had so much more success.
Even in Philly, he wasn't the most accurate thrower. He was still under 60% in his career at Philly.
For sure, but
he was still not an accurate thrower of the ball.
But like those deep balls that go 70 yards, to Deshaun Jackson,
so fun.
Like no one else could do that.
Oh, man,
I mean, the way he would throw a 60-yard deep ball,
I was going to say
was
his
so
deep
effortless.
Ball, it was ridiculous.
And being able to be accurate.
We just view the Texas franchise differently.
I think the biggest problem, to Jeremy's point, it comes down to more of Michael Vick's decision-making. I mean, I think that because of his, you know, last second and not knowing the playbook to know where are my escape routes, where are my guys that are going to be my safety valves, and just split second at the last minute, do I keep running it or do I throw it? And then he made a lot of dumb throws.
Mega says Vic was good for highlight reels, but not for winning.
I'll be one to tell you that in the playoffs in Lambeau, he won, and it was all him.
He was that one good year, though. Like in Atlanta all time, he was 38-28, pretty good, 10 games above 500, and then the rest of his career is 500, so...
I mean, look, that's a team.
I don't think he was the same player.
That's a franchise that honestly has accomplished nothing. They've been in two Super Bowls.
He had 1 year when he came back.
He had maybe his best year, though.
In Philly?
Yeah. That second year when he was after McNabb left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Loved Michael Vick. Did you watch the 30 for 30?
Oh, it's really good.
Newport News, Virginia?
Yeah.
I think so.
That's exactly right. Well, wasn't Iverson Newport News, too?
That makes sense. I think there's a lot of dudes from Newport
I think
News,
that's
Virginia.
Right.
Allen Iverson, that's a good one for the future, too.
I hung out with him one night at a TGI Fridays. Know.
Did you see that documentary's coming out?
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's a doc coming out. It's either already out or it's coming out. I think it's on TNT.
Ooh.
It's everything but the victory, that the fact that they got all the way to the championship, but the Iverson-Larry Brown dynamic.
Oh.
And then,
ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, and
that's
they're crying about it now as opposed to how they handled it earlier. I would really like to see that.
Shook Larry Brown's hand once.
He's very nice. He was a very nice guy when I met him.
Yeah. One remaining question. One remaining question, concern, complaint with this whole PGA-Live merger. And what if? What if Michael Vick stayed in school one more year and was a Houston Texan? What would have happened? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
And the bidet, should it break? Is there a bidet repairman on site?
Razor blunt commentary, delivered with a special purpose.
What's happening to
special purpose!
It's the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
This is Ronel Blanco's song there. What was it? What was that one that you played there?
I'm not saying it because I don't want to get
Was it Yandel 150? Was that the one that you played?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's the most popular song in the Dominican Republic.
Joel, Jeremy just tried to get me fired.
Who they pairing me with next week?
I mean, I didn't do it. It was Joe. Yeah, it was, no, I don't. I think
Joe's going to dip you in. Joe's not going down alone. No, yeah. Taking you down with
it. I think you're good. I think you're good.
You just tried to bury me in the H.
You sure did.
I don't know if it's good or not. Although I'm pretty sure it's good. Yandel 150, because that's the top song in the Dominican Republic. Ronel Blanco from the Dominican Republic. So that is his song. If Ronel Blanco does what?
A quality start, as always.
All right. Ronel Blanco, quality start. Does he have it in him? Does Ronel Blanco have a quality start in him?
Yes. I believe that he does. I just don't. Altuve is supposed to be back tonight. Is the lineup out yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Two's supposed to be back, but Dusty said last night he's going to rest Bregman and Pena. That's not good for the offense, in my opinion. I don't know that the deck is stacked in his favor, but I think he can pitch well.
Altuve is back tonight.
Oh, the lineup's out?
And this lineup is different.
Hold on, real quick, with Ronel Blanco, before we look at the lineup. What did Blanco do last game? Did he make it through six? He didn't go through six.
He went
through
five, right? Didn't he?
Went 5 and 1/3. He started the six, couldn't
finish.
That's right,
that he shouldn't have.
I'm not sure he can get through six innings to get a quality start.
Well, that's the rule.
To get Yandel 150, you got to get a quality start, the most popular song in the Dominican Republic. Well, if it's not that, it'll be something that Bad Bunny does.
If he can't do that, then let's go five innings.
That's Pitbull.
Pitbull. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, he's the hottest thing in the world right now.
He's not Mr. Well. He is. I like him. You fan?
Bad Bunny.
I like Bad Bunny.
He is great.
He's a mega fan
in the WWE.
I'm a big fan of Bad Bunny. I think Bad Bunny's awesome.
He's electric when he's done his wrestling matches.
I'm kind of hoping Ronel Blanco doesn't get a quality start tonight now so we can get some Bad Bunny for Ronel Blanco.
So then we'll go quality start. Fine. We'll push it. We'll keep it the same.
He can win without a quality start. He can go five.
Yeah. Five and hold him three or less.
Yeah, or the Astros.
Semi-quality start?
Yeah, but it's not going to keep the song.
Oh, quality start is to keep the song. That's the standard. So do you want the lineup?
For your guy, for the sake of you guys' fate, I think we should keep the song playing.
So we know that Altuve and Bregman, or I'm sorry, we know that Bregman and Payne are getting a day off.
Right.
Dusty said this yesterday in his postgame. Yeah, all go ahead.
Batting leadoff at shortstop, Mauricio Dubon.
Okay.
Batting second at second base, Jose Altuve.
Oh,
wow.
Alvarez at DH, Tucker and Wright, Abreu at first, Yonier Diaz catching.
That's interesting.
Corey Jolks in left, Chaz in center, and Gray Kessinger third base.
That's interesting that Yiner's catching after Dana Brown said that Yiner needed to catch more. And Dusty
It's Blanco, and he knows Blanco a whole lot better.
But he listened. When has Dusty Baker listened to a general manager?
Well, I think that tells you what level, where their relationship is right now. I think Dusty, if that's right. Click, I think he, in spite of Click, he
exactly.
definitely starts Maldi. Yes. So at least from a relationship standpoint, I like the fact that Dusty didn't spite Dana Brown and did the right thing.
I think so. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think it does show that they have a good relationship. That is what's so the biggest two stories to this lineup is I say I don't care about lineups.
Altuve not in the leadoff.
Dissect these lineups. Yiner's in, and Altuve's batting second.
That's crazy to me.
Like the last, has Jose Altuve, since the COVID year, ever hit anywhere other than leadoff? Because remember he had the bad year, and he told Dusty Baker to like move him down in the lineup?
He did, but I don't know that Dusty did.
No, he did.
He did?
Yeah, he moved him down.
Because
that was the COVID year, I'm pretty sure.
If he was coming off another minor injury where they might have not thrown him right back into leadoff.
I'm going to have to see when the last time that Dusty Baker did not bat Jose Altuve in the leadoff spot. I don't know if I can do this.
That's
quickly.
Crazy. He must be thinking that he needs more productivity, 2-3-4, and Pena can still set the table because he needs.
So he's never hit outside of first this year.
Right.
He hit eighth one time in 2022. Actually, he hit eighth a couple times in 2022.
Is that coming off injury or that?
I think he was struggling. Like he was reeling for a while. And that's whenever he asked Dusty to move him down in the lineup. Like, he was going through it.
Okay.
That was I thought that was the COVID year. I got my years wrong.
And also, I like the fact that he moved Yiner up as well as catching.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I'm wrong here. He hit eighth when he came on as a pinch hitter. So these were days off where he would pinch hit for the guy hitting eighth. So in 2022, last year, he only hit leadoff. And then 2021, let's see real quick, same thing. He only hit leadoff in 2021 unless he was a pinch hitter.
You think he had to go to him first and ask him about this or talk to him about it?
To bat second?
Dusty, to bat second?
I guarantee you he had a talk with Altuve.
I think so, too.
Absolutely, he had a talk with Altuve.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's possible Altuve does not bat leadoff when it's a normal lineup?
I know we've talked about it in the past as something that we would consider or you would consider. I like him in leadoff. I wouldn't move him from leadoff. I don't think that Dusty, again, because he's so loyal to his guys and where they hit, I don't think he would move him from leadoff.
The last time that Jose Altuve was not a leadoff hitter as a starter was the COVID year. He was hitting second most of that year.
You still had Springer, right. Yeah.
Altuve has not started a game since Springer left outside of the leadoff spot until tonight.
Wow.
With George Springer in attendance.
I mean, that's the story, right?
I think so.
As much as Yiner being in there, it makes sense. He's catching a guy he knows. You know, he's been hot. They moved him up in the lineup. All those things. It's not as big a story as to Altuve moving down.
I'm stumped.
Oh, now
ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed an urgent news story. Stop what you're doing.
What was the one last time? It was Jacob Martin. Last time it was Jacob Martin.
I am breaking news and giving you the lead topic for the wheelhouse today.
You're breaking news for this.
The Texans' disrespect is over. The Texans have been given a national football game.
This is old news.
On national television.
This is old news.
Officially. No, Adam Schefter just tweeted it out.
This was tweeted last week. Right, the preseason game against Miami?
No. Oh. Primetime game for the Houston Texans. Saints-Texans. Week 3 of the preseason.
Okay.
That's the wheelhouse lead topic.
I wanted to talk more Altuve. That's how we ended our show.
Yep.
You had a pretty good show today.
God, Joe.
You had a pretty good show today.
You were almost above the Mendoza line, and now look at you.
I lost a no-hitter in the ninth.
The slump king is back.
Well, what a no-hitter. It was like a two-hitter, maybe. What do you think?
It was a quality start.
Do you think they're leading off with the national television preseason game?
I do not.
I think they're going to talk about Damian Pierce's ability to block.
They're leading with the Strohs and will transition quickly.
And did you hear Damian Pierce was watching videos of?
No.
Christian McCaffrey. That's the wheelhouse lead story if I've ever heard of one. Mm. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Joe George for the three-hitter. He's Blank, I'm Brad, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Runner, not hitter.
Saving money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.